Speaking of this, the pastime of, not the pastime, but the Narada speaking to King Puchini Barishad of the story of Paranjana and his next birth as? And then it has ended. And Puchini Barishad has heard everything and he has understood much, but he has not captured as his own every element in the allegory. So therefore, in the first text of the 29th chapter, he says, he replies to Narada's long story. He says, my dear Lord, because remember that we have been hearing it bit by bit, we have had a chance to study it, go back and reflect over the different parts of the story. We have heard Prabhupada's purports. But Puchini Barishad has just heard the story from beginning to end. So he says, my dear Lord, we could not appreciate completely the purport of your allegorical story of King Paranjana. I could not understand it fully, he's saying. Actually, those who are perfect in spiritual knowledge can understand. But for us, who are overly attached to fruitive activities, to realize the purpose of your story is very difficult. Second text. The great sage Narada continues, so he's speaking. Narada begins to immediately explain again different points of the analogy to make it perfectly clear to Puchini Barishad what he wishes from him. Chapter 29, second text. Which, the rest of which chapter? Yeah. I do believe so. Just yesterday. You must understand that Paranjana, so the points that he's explaining here and have been explained in a little bit previously, Prabhupada has explained it in the purport, but the points he's explaining here, Prabhupada has already assimilated into the purports. So he says, you must understand that Paranjana, the living entity, transmigrates according to his own work into different types of bodies. There are so many different kinds of bodies. There are 8,400,000 species of life, and in each have their individually tailored, their individual bodies based on the work. There are individuals even amongst the different species. In humans, it's obvious, but in monkeys and dogs and cats and lions, they're individuals according to their different karma. So the living entity transmigrates according to his own work into different types of bodies, which may be one-legged. Prabhupada in the purport explains one-legged entities. We don't use, sometimes they're trees are considered one-legged, and here ghosts also, because somehow or another ghosts hobble about on their one leg. And one-legged, two-legged, three-legged, four-legged, many-legged, or simply legless. Transmigrating into these various types of bodies, the living entity, as the so-called enjoyer, is known as Paranjana. Now, please note carefully that he, the living entity, as the so-called enjoyer, is known as Paranjana. This is the essence of the, or one of the main points of the allegory, that the living entity who is trying to enjoy the material world, bhunte prakriti janiha, He is known as Paranjana. So this is the common element for all conditioned souls in the material world, regardless of their body, is that they have an intent for enjoyment. Purusha, again, Purusha Prakriti Stohi, Bhunte Prakriti Janiha, in the material energy, he's attempting to enjoy himself. Again, because this is in one sense in this particular place, in the story, and in the pastime in Kapila Muni's teachings, this is the so much of our preaching to non-devotees is on these simple points, which in one sense we take for granted, at least intellectually and philosophically, to remove the spirit of enjoyment from the heart is not as simple as understanding the basic philosophy that we cannot enjoy within the material world, because then we have to apply that philosophy and give up the tendency, the attempt to try to enjoy within the material world. And it's so subtle, these tendencies are so subtle, to simply become a servant, actually a servant of Krishna, is so difficult in this world because of the incredible complexity of the material energy. It is so made by Krishna to bind us and to disallow our escape. And it's specifically on this point that we want to enjoy, and the first subtle covering over the soul is this ahankar, the false ego, and that is more or less a sense of enjoyership in this world. And it's amazing how if one possesses that sense of enjoyership, he can turn anything spiritual into basically something material. We can't turn the holy names into something material, but we try to exploit even the holy names or anything for our own pleasure, as if we're the center. And no, this has to be removed from our heart, has to be removed from the heart in the sense that as long as we don't give up the sense of enjoyership, the full sense of enjoyership, we cannot be happy in the material world, which is the sense of this allegory, but there is no way we can enter into the spiritual atmosphere, either trying to enjoy in subtle or gross ways. So the living entity, regardless of his body, the conditioned soul is trying to enjoy in the material atmosphere, and he is the one who is Puranjan. And according to his attempt and how Maya has entangled him, he acquires some karma, and that the forces of material nature award him under the superintendence of the material energy, excuse me, under the superintendence of the Lord, Daivena Karma Naitrena, under the superintendence of the Lord, we're awarded a material body, and then we make another attempt to manipulate the energy for ourselves as the enjoyment, and it's fruitless. It's fruitless. What do I mean when I say it's fruitless? Or I heard Prabhupada, okay, what do I mean when I say it's fruitless? It doesn't come. Or as Prabhupada called, today in one lecture I heard of Prabhupada, he kept saying, it is rascaldom, it is rascaldom. And there was one, it was actually a Swedish psychologist that Prabhupada was talking to, and he said, what is rascaldom mean? And then Prabhupada gave his definition. I always conceive of it like a kingdom is the place where the kings live, And rascaldom is the place where a rascal lives. It's in that conceptions, the conceptions of rascals. And Prabhupada just defined it as foolishness. It is rascaldom. It is foolishness. We can't actually enjoy in this world because this is the place of repeated birth and death. And everything is always changing in this world and shifting. It is insecure. We long for security. And everything we accumulate in this life with our work is like Paranjana. It's going to be crushed. The whole city is going to be demolished and turned into
powder,
yes. Yes, powder or dust. Dust, just particles of sand. Everything we are attached to in this world. Everything, beginning with the body. So this is a very frightening thing to face, in fact. But it is reality, and reality should be faced, because the nature of reality is that if we try to avoid it, it's going to chase us, because it's real. Illusion you can avoid, but reality is unavoidable, and therefore is that's reality. So he's described that the living entity, so this point, watch how this point of the living entity trying to enjoy the fruitless or rascaldom attempt or foolish attempt to enjoy, it comes up again and again and again. And this is the purpose and the purport of this allegory to convince us and detach us from the spirit of enjoyment which binds us to the bodily concept of life, because the bodily concept of life or the body is the vehicle for enjoyment through the senses. It is the vehicle, the means by which we enjoy. So it's the enjoying spirit that attaches one to the bodily concept of life. And that bodily concept of life makes us act, accrue karma, and that leads to the next body, and another attempt for enjoyment, and another bodily concept of life, and more karma, and then transfer to another body. And this is, goes on and on and on. And if we're wondering, I feel so much this body, do I really transfer to another body? Again, well, if we're this body, is the this body we're referring to the same this body that we had 20 years ago? That this body is different from this body. For my body now, clearly it's different, but I'm the same person. So I've already transmigrated. So why just assume, if I'm already experienced in the fact of transmigration of the soul throughout the body, that the body continuously changes and the soul doesn't change, the identity, the person, me, doesn't change. So why just assume that the body is changing, the body is changing, the soul is staying the same, the soul is staying the same, and suddenly the body dies and then the soul dies? Why just assume that? It is ignorance. Ignorance because of such a strong identification and illusion that this is me. The body is me. And this illusion comes due to the modes of material nature, one aspect of Maya, the ingrediential aspect, the upadan karan. So, text 3. Now he's going to go on, but just note the occurrences of this concept of the enjoyer being the conditioned soul, and that this story is meant to encourage us to give up this enjoying spirit because it is a fruitless attempt. It will not bring us what we want. It is like planting a tree. There is fruit of work. So we plant a tree to get the fruit. But if we plant the tree, and the whole purpose of planting the tree is to get the fruit, but if we already know that this tree is not going to produce any fruit, it's going to be fruitless, and the purpose of our planting the tree is to get fruit, but we know this tree is not going to produce any fruit, then an intelligent person will give up the attempt. Why put energy into it? Only a foolish person will proceed with something knowing that his objective isn't going to be fulfilled. Clearly, consciously, he knows that, and yet he's going ahead. So the purpose, again, of the allegories is to firm our conviction that to enjoy in the material world is a fruitless attempt, and it just brings suffering. Text 3. The person I have described as unknown, avigyata, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the master and eternal friend of the living entity. Since the living entities cannot realize the Supreme Personality of Godhead by material names, activities, or qualities, he remains everlastingly unknown to the conditioned soul. He cannot be conquered by our material senses and our material mind and our material intelligence. He cannot be. And one can perceive him to some degree through the pious intelligence, but one cannot perceive his form and qualities. So the conditioned souls who are relying just on the ascending method, they cannot know him. They cannot know him. So therefore he is avigyata, the unknown friend. But yet, although he is unknown to us, and he remains a friend. 4. When the living entity wants to enjoy the modes of material nature in their totality, concept, he wants to enjoy. In other words, when he wants to really lord it over material nature to enjoy, he prefers, out of many bodily forms, to accept that body which has 9 gates, 2 hands, 2 legs. Thus he prefers to become a human being or a demigod. So he wants to enjoy, and the preferable body for enjoyment is the human body, a greater facility. But yet, even though it is a greater facility for enjoyment, the material body, it still places one in the cycle of birth and death, the spirit of enjoyment. There is no situation. This is so hard for the conditioned soul to accept, that there is no situation in the material world that will please me, actually. And therefore, neither attachment nor envy are of any value. Because even if I get what someone else has and I want, I still will not be happy. And Prabhupada said, I can't remember the exact quote all the time, but unless one comes to this conclusion, actually realizes that his progress in Krishna consciousness, he can't progress very much. He has to overcome this very subtle or gross concept that I can enjoy in this world. Somehow or another, is some situation I can enjoy. It's better to search for a situation in which me or myself, or I'm so contaminated that have enjoying tendencies. There must be some situation that I can advance. Not enjoy, but advance. I, who am so contaminated with passion, ignorance, and possess so many material desires within my contaminated heart, there must be a situation in which I can advance and develop my love for Krishna. So the human birth is the birth that gives facility for the greatest amount of enjoying the material world. 5. The great sage Narada continued, The word pramadha mentioned in this regard refers to material intelligence. Or what? Or what does Prabhupada call it? Material intelligence, or another word for material intelligence?
Ignorance.
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty funny, isn't it? Material intelligence means ignorance. In what sense?
Yeah.
It's bound to fail, but what is material intelligence succeed in? Yes, it entangles one. It makes a plan how to enjoy the material world. And if you succeed in your plan, you failed ultimately because you're more entangled. Your enjoyment entangles you and binds you and forces you into further suffering. The cycle of samsara, which is compared to a dhavanala, a forest fire. So material intelligence is ignorance. Pramada, illusion, delusion. It is to be understood as such. When one takes shelter of this kind of intelligence, he identifies himself with the material body, influenced by the material consciousness of I and mine. That means I am my body, and all that I see or all that I can possess is mine. That's material consciousness. Aham amiti. So possessing that consciousness, he begins to enjoy and suffer through his senses. Thus the living entity is entrapped. And the way that the material nature works is that every time someone becomes powerful, powerful means powerful enjoying. What does the material energy immediately create? Yes, an enemy, a person who hates you. And you have immediately a competitor. You're trying to enjoy and someone is trying to pull you down immediately. This is the incredible material nature. So therefore, the bigger you become, the bigger your enemies become. Or they combine together, because you're so powerful, they combine together to knock you over, your enemies. So is this a pleasant place where this is the law? The law of existence? Is this? That you can't possibly succeed? All the rules that govern the place insist and demand that you fail in your attempt? The conclusion is, of course, that we are supposed to reach is, no, I don't want to be here. I want to get out. But not just get out. I want to go to some place where these laws don't have anything to do with me. I don't want to have anything to do with it anymore. And that place, if one goes there, and that place is known as Vaikuntha, Goloka Vrindavan, automatically, if one goes there, one is automatically liberated. So we shouldn't try to fix the material world. Shouldn't try to fix our situation in the material world. It's always going to be just the way it is. Just a mess. Undue competition and fighting and backstabbing. This is just the nature of the material world, and friends and enemies. Better to just simply get out. Cut the anchor, the attachment, and get out. What's the example of the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that Krishna says? Yeah, just cut this tree. Meaning, really, not cut the tree, cut your attachment to it. And why should we cut our attachment to it? Yeah, it won't give us what we want. It will give us what we don't want. Viparyatama will give us the opposite of what we want. So it's important that we hear these topics again and again, because at least I can understand my own heart the gross, subtle attachments, it needs preaching to. Because we can't go upward spiritually until these things are cut. We want to go upward spiritually, but we have to get rid of these subtle and gross material attachments. This false concepts of what I and what I am and what is truly mine. Purport by Prabhupada. In material existence, so-called intelligence is actually ignorance. When intelligence is cleared up, it is called buddhi yoga. In other words, when intelligence is dovetailed with the desires of Krishna, it is called buddhi yoga or bhakti yoga. So when our intelligence is used not materially to satisfy our own selfish plans for sense gratification, but to please Krishna, then it is something different. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam pratibhovakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yenamam upayantite. To those who are constantly devoted and worship me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. Real intelligence means linking with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, not how to enjoy the material world. Subtly. Oh, the mind is so tricky in these regards. So tricky. It will take anything. The material mind will take anything and try to use it in such a way that we will be the center of it, will appear as the center of existence and squeeze some enjoyment from it. Real intelligence means linking with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When this is done, the Supreme Personality of Godhead from within gives one the real intelligence by which one can return home. Back to Godhead. Intelligence in the material world is described in this verse as pramada, because in material existence the living entity falsely claims things to be his. He thinks, I am the monarch of all I survey. What does that mean? I am the monarch of all I survey. And this one little sentence explains the false concept of I and mine. Who am I? I am the monarch. And what is mine? All I survey, everything I could see is mine. How dare anyone trespass in anything that I claim as mine? This is ignorance. Because we are not the monarch, and the proof that nothing is mine is that when I leave this world, I take what is mine with me and I leave all I survey behind. Actually, nothing belongs to him. Even the body and the senses do not belong to him, for they are given to him by the grace of the Lord to satisfy his different propensities through the material energy. Nothing actually belongs to the living entity, but he comes mad after everything, claiming, this is mine, this is mine, this is mine. Janasya mohoyam aham mameti. This is called illusion. Nothing belongs to the living entity, but he claims that everything belongs to him. Lord Chaitanya recommends that this false intelligence be purified. Cheto darpanam ajanam. When the mirror of intelligence is polished, the real activities of the living entity begins. This means that when a person comes to the platform of Krishna consciousness, his real intelligence acts. At that time, he knows that everything belongs to Krishna and nothing belongs to him on the material level. But he also knows that I am Krishna's and Krishna is mine. So that is the pure sense of I and mine. I belong to Krishna. I am Krishna's servant. And that I want something to possess. And when it truly loves Krishna and thinks of Krishna as mine, I am Krishna's and Krishna is mine, on a pure level with no material selfish contaminations, that's Goloka Vrindavan. As long as one thinks that everything belongs to him, he's in material consciousness. And when he knows perfectly that everything belongs to Krishna, he is in Krishna consciousness. So that's why the great sadhus of even today or previous times, they would live so simply, so as not to become attached and think, this is mine, this is mine, this is mine. But the greatest sense of that detachment is anashaktasya vishyan yatartan upayunjata nirbandhe krishna sambandhe yukta karayunjata. Instead of nothing is mine, just write to everything is Krishna's and use everything in Krishna's service. This is niskinchana bhakti. And then if one is truly in that mood, he can possess the whole universe but not be contaminated, because he never falls from his position as being a servant. 6. The 5 working senses. And so he's explaining again, because what Prachini Barishat, he said, I could understand some things, but I couldn't understand everything completely. So he's explaining the basic elements of the story and what they mean. The 5 working senses and 5 senses that acquire knowledge are all male friends of Paranjani. The living entity is assisted by these senses in acquiring knowledge and engaging in activities. The engagement of the senses are known as girlfriends. And the serpent, which was described as having 5 heads, is the life air acting within the 5 circulatory processes. And all of these, for a conditioned soul, not for a devotee or an aspiring devotee, they are engaged, the serpent, the friends, the male friends, the girlfriends, they're all engaged in trying to bring enjoyment for that soul, for the Paranjana. That is their business. The 11th attendant, who is the commander of the others, is known as the mind. He is the leader of all the senses, both in the acquisition of knowledge and in the performance of work. The Panchala kingdom is that atmosphere in which the 5 sense objects are enjoyed. Within the Panchala kingdom is the city of the body, which has 9 gates. Prabhupada's purport, we'll read 2/3 of it. The mind is the center of all activities, and it is described here as Brihad Bal, very powerful. To get out of the clutches of Maya, material existence, one has to control the mind. And what did Arjuna say when Krishna told him that you have to control your mind and see equal vision? Yes. Very, very difficult. The mind is... It's because its business is accepting and rejecting, and it's gross. And one had to break the false concept of false ego, the false concept of self. One has to break this holding of the mind onto things for sense gratification. And therefore, the rules and regulations of Vaidhi Bhakti are there, where we don't listen to our mind, we accept a different authority, the Guru and Shastra. And, you know, I may feel like it, I may not feel like it. My mind wants to, my mind doesn't feel like doing this today. My mind feels like doing that and running here and going there for enjoyment. So a serious devotee, he gives up. He puts himself under a different control. And that different control is Guru and Shastra and Sadhu. The mind is the center. One has to control the mind. According to training, the mind is the friend and the enemy of the living entity. That's Bandurakmat Manas Chaiva Manas Manajitana Natmanas Satreve Varte Tatmaiva Satruvat. The mind can either be the friend or the enemy. It's the friend when it's attached to Krishna. It's the enemy when it's attached to enjoyment. Why is it the enemy when it's attached to enjoyment? Lower forms or higher forms, like Uchini Bharishat, he was attached to higher forms of life, but in the material world, and it's still the enemy. If one gets a good manager, his estate is nicely managed. But if the manager is a thief, his estate is spoiled. Similarly, in this material condition existence, the living entity gives power of attorney to the mind. What does that mean? Huh? What is it? What is the reference, power of attorney? Yeah, it's like when you have a, you sign a legal document that this person can make decisions on my behalf. I give him the power of attorney, it is called, the full legal right to make decisions on my behalf, and what he decides, it's just as if I'm deciding it. So we give that to the mind, that power of attorney. Whatever you decide, my dear mind, I accept as me and my decision. You want something, I want it. That's how I feel. You are averse to something, I am averse to it. Full identification with the mind. And as you can imagine, if one has a wild mind, which is specifically the training given in Gurukula, the training in the material world is specifically how to have a mind that's out of control. How to make your mind out of control. And if you go to any city in the West, you see the wildest things, practically speaking. You know, people Well, that's this part. But this part would be piercing. They have their pins. Just think how bizarre the mind has to become to think that it's going to become happy. You're going to become happy if you put needles in your and pins in your tongue and stuff like that, and here, huh? And then of course the hairstyles were green. Just see how you. There's no. It's just the insanity of a wild mind. That's all it is. Making a fool, actually, of individuals. Do they have those in Moscow? Even in Vrindavan. You mean the devotees who are coming from overseas? Or oh yeah. That's Kali Yuga, and that is ignorance. And the cure for ignorance is knowledge. So the living entity gives power of attorney to his mind, as such he is liable to be misdirected by his mind into enjoying sense objects. Srila Ambarish Maharaj therefore engaged his mind upon the lotus feet of the Lord. Savai Mana Krishna Pararavindya. So that is the proper thing to do with the mind. Krishna himself says the same thing. Man Mana Baba Mad Bhakto Madhyaji Mam Namaskuru. You place, fix your mind upon me and become my devotee. That is the cure for the wild mind. And then from text 8 to text 17, it describes, Narada Muni continues to describe what the eyes are, the ears are, the nostrils, the mouth, the gates, in the analogy. So we've heard that already, so we'll jump to text 18 through 20 here. And there'll be explanation of more of the different points. Narada Muni continues. This is 18 through 20. What I referred to as the chariot was in actuality the body. All this has been explained in purports. The senses are the horses that pull that chariot. As time passes, year after year, these horses run without obstruction. But in fact, they make no progress. They're running and running and running and running and running, but they're going nowhere. Two things come to my mind. That's such a powerful example. Like sometimes you see cars whose wheels are stuck. It's in sand or in snow or mud, and they just go and go and go and go, and the wheels turn and turn, but they don't get anywhere. They don't move. So people are under the illusion that they're making progress. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, you would tell the story of the marriage procession when the people would, they got in the boat one night, and the boatman was to, there was a marriage the next day up the river, and the boatman rowed and rowed and rowed and rowed, and everyone went to sleep, and they awoke the next morning, and they were exactly in the same position they were before. And why? Because they neglected to pick up the anchor. So that little story is to tell us that unless we pick up the anchor of our material attachments and the tendency to enjoy on the material level, we may work so hard in spiritual life, but we're not going to get anywhere. And another thing about this type of spinning wheels and running, Prabhupada used to say, the dogs are running on four legs and men are running on four wheels. What is the difference? And when he said, what is the difference? He was saying, really there is no difference. They're not getting anywhere. They're running, 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 but only after bones, only after some material sense pleasures. They make no progress, true progress. Pious and impious activities are the two wheels of the chariot. The three modes of material nature are the chariot's flags. The five types of life air constitute the living entity's bondage, and the mind is considered to be the rope. Intelligence is the chariot driver. The heart is the sitting place in the chariot, and the dualities of life, such as pleasure and pain, are the knotting place. The seven elements are the coverings of the chariot, and the working senses are the five external processes. The 11 senses are the soldiers being engrossed in sense enjoyment. The living entity, seated on the chariot, hankers after fulfillment of his false desires and runs after sense enjoyment, life after life, after life, after life. Purport. The entanglement of the living entity in sense enjoyment is very nicely explained in these verses. The word samvatsar means the progress of time, meaning the progress of time is significant. Day after day, week after week, fortnight after fortnight, month after month, year after year, the living entity becomes entangled in the chariot's progress. The chariot rests on two wheels, which are pious and impious activities. The living entity attains a certain position in life in a particular type of body according to his pious and impious activities. But his transmigration to different bodies should not be taken as progress. It is just like a dog. When the dog chases his own tail, he just goes around and around and around. He's maybe thinking, I'm working very hard. I'm going here and there because my legs are moving so fast, but he's not getting anywhere. Just going around in circles. And the circle that we go in is the circle of birth and death, samsara. It is not progress. It is cyclical ignorance. Real progress is explained in Bhagavad Gita, Chakva Deham Purna Janmi Naiti. One makes real progress when he does not have to take another material body. As stated in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Eta Brahmanda Bari Ananta Jivagan, Shorasi Laksha Yonita Kariye Brahman. The living entity is wandering throughout the entire universe and taking birth in different species on different planets. And what's the cause of this wandering? Not searching for material enjoyment as much as that enjoying spirit. I want to be the enjoyer. Ishwara Aham, Aham Bhogi. And all the tendency of to be the Ishwara, to the controller, is for the purpose of enjoying. And all the attempts for the money is so that one can be the Ishwara, enjoyer. So, but the purpose is Aham Bhogi, so I can enjoy. This spirit of enjoyment, we should pray. We should pray to whomever we pray to banish that. Yes, Lord Nisringadev, yes. That this spirit of enjoyment becomes banished from our heart. And subtly and gross, becomes banished from our heart, and instead the spirit of servitorship towards Krishna and the devotees. The devotees are no different from Krishna, Bhagavat, and all living entities. Servitorship to Krishna, that should take its place. Krishna, how can I serve you? And that's Prabhupada, that was practically his first definition of the Mahamantra, please engage me in your service. A sincere calling of the soul, like a baby calls for his mother, for what? Not to even be free from the miseries of material existence, but please allow me to serve you. Or I heard him, or somewhere we read, or I heard, said, please accept me. Please accept me as your servant. Banishing the desire, the false desire that we can be the enjoyer, and accept me as your servant. So we pray to Lord Nisringadev that by his mercy this will happen. And often it takes a crushing of our attempts for enjoyment. That's Yasyaham Anugrahami. We have an indomitable spirit of enjoyment, and Krishna. And then we feel we have lost everything. But if our consciousness remains some sober, we find out that we just lost something that was horrible, in fact, because of our bondage, the spirit of enjoyment. Real progress, the last line of this purport that we'll read right now, or except we'll turn the page and read a little more. Real progress is getting out of this material world altogether and attaining the spiritual world. And towards the end of the purport, in these verses, the word mriga trishnam, pradhavati, are very significant because the living entity is influenced by a thirst for sense enjoyment. Again, the same principle, thirsting for enjoyment. And because we think, thirsting that I want to enjoy, and because I think that I am my body, I want to enjoy my senses. The living entity is influenced by thirst for sense enjoyment. He is like a deer that goes to the desert to search out water. In a desert, an animal simply searches in vain for water. Of course there is no water in the desert, and an animal simply sacrifices his life in an attempt to find it. Everyone is planning for future happiness, thinking that somehow or another, if he can reach a certain point, he will be happy. In actuality, however, when he comes to that point, he sees that there is no happiness. He then plans to go further and further to another point. This is called Mriga Trishna, and its basis is sense enjoyment in this material world. Very graphically stated. Continuing, text 21 and 22 we'll read. What was previously explained is Chandavega. So who is speaking?
Narada.
To whom?
Narada.
Yes. So Chandavega's powerful time is covered by days and nights, namely Gandharvas and Gandharvis. The body's lifespan is gradually reduced by the passage of days and nights, which is number 360. What was described as Kalakanya should be understood as old age. No one wants to accept old age, but Yavanesha, Yavanaraj, who is death, accepts Jara, old age, as his sister. 23-25. The followers of Javaneshwar, Yamaraj, are called the soldiers of death, and they are known as the various types of disturbances that pertain to the body and mind. Prajara represents the two types of fever, extreme heat and extreme cold, typhoid and pneumonia. The living entity lying down within the body is disturbed by many tribulations pertaining to providence, to other living entities, and to his own body and mind. So what are those referring to, the Sanskrit terms? Ariyatmika, Ali Klesha, Ali Bhautika Klesha, and Ali Dhaivika Klesha. Providence. Providence usually means it just happens. Fate. And or because Ari Dhaivika, we usually refer to it as the miseries from the demigods, but it also means that providence throws one's way or one's fate. And it is not easy to accept one's fate. Despite all kinds of tribulations, the living entity, subjected to the necessities of the body, mind, and senses, and suffering from various types of disease, is carried away by many plans due to his lust to enjoy the world. Although transcendental to this material existence, the living entity, out of ignorance, accepts all these material miseries under the pretext of false egoism, I and mine. In this way, he lives for 100 years within this body. We'll read the last paragraph of Prabhupada's purport to 25. Knowing the basic misery of material existence, so this is the point. We should become convinced of the basic misery of material existence. So any time that the mind says, I want, and it pulls out of its paper of power attorney saying, you and me are one, we have to say, no. I am convinced of the basic misery of material existence. We should to preach to the mind. And that's the purpose of the intelligence, or one of the main purposes. So knowing the basic misery of material existence, one should be induced to get out of the material clutches and return home back to Godhead. Actually, the living entity is not at all happy in this material body. Because of the body, he suffers thirst and hunger and is influenced by the mind, by words, by anger, by the belly, by the genitals, by the rectum, and so on. Manifold miseries encircle the transcendental living entity simply because he desires to satisfy his senses in this material world. So therefore, one should naturally conclude that since I desire to satisfy my senses in the material world, and that trying to satisfy my senses in the material world cannot make me happy, therefore I should give up the desire to satisfy my senses in the material world. And that's detachment from the bodily concept of life. If he simply withdraws from activities of sense gratification and applies his senses in the service of the Lord, all the problems of material existence will immediately diminish. And with the advancement of Krishna consciousness, he will be freed from all tribulation. And after giving up the body, he will return home back to Godhead. Text 26, 27. The living entity, by nature, has minute independence to choose his own good or bad fortune. Sometimes we feel so controlled by the modes of material nature and by our karma that we think we may not have any independence. But actually, we do. Otherwise, what would be the purpose of giving these kind of instructions or the Vedic instructions if there wasn't freedom? Because we do have some freedom to take the instructions and try our best to apply them. Otherwise, what would be the use of Krishna giving them? He has minute independence to choose his own good or bad fortune. But when he forgets his Supreme Master, the Personality of Godhead, he gives himself up to the modes of material nature. Being influenced by it, so we forget Krishna, that's the first point. Then we're placed under the control of the modes of material nature, just like criminal citizens are placed under the control of the prison. And then the power of attorney is given to the mind. So being influenced by the modes of material nature identifies with the body, and for the interest of the body becomes attached to various activities. Sometimes he's under the influence of the modes of ignorance, sometimes the mode of passion, sometimes the mode of goodness. The living entity thus gets different types of bodies under the modes of nature. And the result of these different types of modes that control us, according to the karma that we have accrued, text 28, and this is the last text we shall read. Those who are situated in the mode of goodness, so this is the fruit of activities, bring us under the control of one or another or different combinations of the modes. And then what is according to the modes that control us? Those who act in the mode of goodness act piously according to the Vedic injunctions. Thus they are elevated to the higher planetary system where the demigods live. Those who are influenced by the mode of passion engage in various types of productive activities in the planetary systems where human beings live. Just see, how is it? First of all, the demigods, higher planets, happiness. Really, an incredible lessening of misery. Who would like to go? Are you sure? Are you really sure? Maybe just for some time to see what it's like there. Beautiful forest, no loudspeakers. Everything wonderful, very subtle atmosphere. But sometimes there is. These kind of desires are very deeply in the heart. But listen to what the mode of passion gets you in. Various types of productive activities. I want to do this. Always, like all the cities of the world. It's running. These are the planetary systems where the human beings live. So that tendency is passion. And similarly, those influenced by the mode of darkness are subjected to various types of misery and live in the animal kingdom. And we'll just read from the second two-thirds of Prabhupada's purport. At the present moment, human society is overly influenced by the mode of passion. And this is the standard economic development, production, an underdeveloped country, and the, what do they call, third world countries. What is this? What are the second world countries? I never could figure that one out. What does second world mean?
They said that India is made it to second world, not third world. So second world is a little better off than third world.
Yeah, but no one ever uses the term second world or first world. Who will say, I am a first world country? Just see. What does it mean? It means it's all defined terms of production. Economic production, specifically production. Yes. Yes. Product means production. Their work... At the present moment, human society is overly influenced by the mode of passion, and consequently, people are engaged in working in big factories. In another place, Prabhupada says, factory is synonymous with hell. And one time I was driving, fairly recently, I was driving from Melbourne to the town nearby where I was visiting when Mataji was leaving this world. And I was driving there fairly often and to a town called Geelong, which has a huge factory for Ford Motor Corporation there. And by chance, when I would be passing through this Geelong city, it was the time when the factories were getting out. The shifts would change. And when you saw the faces of the people as they were getting out of 8 hours of factory work, oh, there was such misery and suffering on their faces. It was so clear. They weren't even happy to get out. They were just miserable, deeply immersed in misery. Factory means hell. And we take this thing about having a job and factories is life in civilized world, but you know, even 200 years ago, there was no such thing as a job, practically speaking. Creating jobs, that's what the politicians promised to do. We'll create so many jobs. Factory jobs. Factory means hell. They forget how this Prabhupada continues. People are engaged in working in big factories. They forget how distressful it is to live in such places. In Bhagavad Gita, such activities are described as ugra karma, that is, distressful activities. Those who utilize the energy of the worker are capitalists, and those who actually perform the work are called laborers. In actuality, they are both capitalists, and the workers are in the mode of passion and ignorance. The result is that there is always a distressful situation. Did anyone here ever work in a factory? Yes? What was your experience? Yeah? A messenger. So at least you got out of the factory. Yes? Yeah. What was your experience as a factory worker? Huh? That something dies in of the spirit. You worked in a factory? Oh. What's it? So if you don't want to call it hell, what do you want to call it? Worse than hell. Or lower than hell. So you could really see how... And on the other hand, did anyone ever work in a farm or something like that? Yes. Yes, you did that too. Okay. What was your farm experience like? Tell us. You liked it. So Prabhupada's mission was very merciful and very big. Well, there's that famous conversation he had with some reporter, and the reporter said, but if everyone in the world becomes Krishna conscious, what will happen to the factories? And Prabhupada said, let the factories go to hell. Spoke like that. And also when I first started chanting to make money for the temple, I used to drive a taxi cab. A taxi. But I didn't change money. But I was driving a taxi, and I picked up a man who owned a big peanut butter factory. So I said to him, you must eat a lot of peanut butter. And he said, I never eat peanut butter. I know how it's made. And since then, I've never eaten any peanut butter. That was enough to convince me. The result of the passion and ignorance is that there's always a distressful situation. In contrast to these men are those influenced by the mode of goodness, the karmis and jnanis. The karmis, under the direction of the Vedic instructions, try to elevate themselves to the higher planetary systems. The jnanis try to merge into the existence of Brahman, the impersonal future of the Lord. In this way, all classes of living entities and various species of life are existing within this material world. This explains superior and inferior life forms within the material world. But it is within the material world, and everyone is infected with an enjoying spirit. So we'll end here. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna. Questions, comments? What happens is, the mind, you say no, and the mind says, okay. But it's just waiting. And then it comes up again slowly. You say, no. Okay, no problem. And then it comes up again slowly. Think, no. And then it says, you're really doing well at controlling the mind, aren't you? But it's the mind talking. You're so expert at controlling the mind. And the mind is getting bigger as it's saying that. And then suddenly, and you get this huge roar, and the mind retaliates. It gives you a huge kick. It gives you so much trouble. And he says, you try to do this again, I'm going to make you so miserable. You're going to have so much trouble with your mind. You're going to wish, wow. So therefore, one of the commentators said that Krishna calling Arjuna Mahabaho means, if you can control the crest jewel of all warriors, the mind, then you are really mighty armed. But we have a different method to control the mind. What is that?
I had some insight.
Wait, just first answer that question, then you can tell your insight. How? What is our method of controlling the mind? Yes. Okay, how do you make your mind pacified? Maybe this is not a fair question to ask. Yeah.
Well, the example is given with
or just look at Krishna Balaram and Radha Samasunda. Then the mind becomes very, very happy. Yes, so if I place it at the lotus feet of Krishna, it needs a positive engagement. The Buddhists try to kill the mind and stop the mind.
The realization I had was just what he said. He was reading my thinking.
Have you been reading his mind?
Because also from my army experience, I used to ride horses because I was in cavalry. And it's exactly like that. The horse is very strong, but you can control. But if you are sensitive enough, you can control, because you know when to pull, when to relieve. But if you don't have this sensitiveness to perceive when it's time to make me run more, or when, if you don't see, now he's actually tired, I should cool down, or not, he's don't want. You have to be sensitive, and then you can control. Otherwise,
when did you start riding horses?
Sorry?
When did you begin riding horses?
While in the army, for a few years.
You never rode before that?
No. So what happened is this: if you are not sensitive, the horse throws you out. So with the mind is the same. Sometimes you have to say stop, or sometimes you make a little conception, and it's very simple. You are also controlling your mind, but it's not your mind. It's the dynamics.
Yes.
I have a question from the beginning of the chapter, phase one at the end of the purple.
Yes.
So
yes, sir.
This 29th chapter describes that by too much attachment for woman, one becomes a woman in the next life.
Yes.
However, I went to the chapter and I don't see anything God, which explains.
Okay, then ask the question again at the end. You went through it, but I didn't go through it recently, so I won't be able to answer the question. But if it comes up again, if it comes up in a clear way, but it does speak about, there's a wonderful, the most detailed description of transmigration in the chapter, more than in the Bhagavad Gita. So, without specifically looking to see in the chapter where the answer to that question is, it's probably in there, my guess.
I was thinking that
change it to remove the independent enjoying spirit then. Charvak Muni, yes. Yes.
And it's like when someone plays the role of Charvak Muni in this card, it's very easy to identify with that mood.
So therefore we shouldn't play the role of Charvak Muni, because it's too easy to identify with that mood. Perfectly natural for a conditioned soul. Like Paranjana.
Paranjana, he gets the lesson.
No, see, that's the point, that no one escapes. No one escapes, like the Charvak Munis of this world, that I'm so satisfied. There's the rest of the story of the life has to be played out. No one is satisfied by old age and death, and when your liver can no longer digest all the ghee that you begged, borrowed and stole, and then you get jaundice, and then your liver falls out, and you get Hep C and B also, and then you die. So that's taking shelter of ignorance. And then in your next life you become a who knows what. But the other extreme of being a Chava Muni person is being a pure devotee. That's the other extreme. Because it's not self-centered. It's Krishna-centered. The enjoying spirit means selfish. The serving spirit. Kaipa Kandak is also self-centered. So he's thinking about himself. Self-absorbed. Just in a different form. And more subtle, too. By increasing the serving spirit and by purifying the heart, we have to make it proper. We want to enjoy, but independently we can't enjoy, imitatively of Krishna. If you stop breathing, you'll die, for sure. The body will die. So what are you saying that we should allow ourselves some enjoyment? Simple enjoyments, mode of goodness enjoyments. But there's a way of, we should enjoy prasadam, we should enjoy kirtan, we should enjoy looking at the beautiful forms of the Lord, we should enjoy the incense that's been offered to the Lord. But then we try to move from being primary enjoyer to being the secondary enjoyer, which is good. By Krishna's enjoyment, he has taken this garland and let me now take it as his remnants and I can enjoy it. And that, then it becomes more seva. But if we want to push the point of enjoying spirit, we get ourselves in trouble. We want to push the point of serving Krishna. And naturally, see, the devotee doesn't think about the results of enjoyment that he gets from his serving. But he naturally gets those enjoyments. He naturally gets his nourishment. Tushti pushti chudapaya anugasan. But he's not doing it, oh, I'm going to serve Krishna so I can enjoy. If he concentrates on the serving, naturally he'll enjoy it, but that's not his interest. It's just a byproduct of being situated in one's constitutional position. Because we are also Satchitananda, but tiny. You follow? Does that answer your question? even though it's true that we enjoy, the mood of the person, the devotee, aspiring devotee, should be serving. It's not his desire, isn't, and Krishna's mercy is that he will enjoy. Huh? That's to devotional service. Where?
Who?
You had a comment? Yes. So it naturally, if one gives up the enjoying spirit, when they turn out the lights, it means that the class is over. They want us to vacate the hall. Yes. When we give up that spirit. And this is explained in the fourth chapter of Adi Lila, this point. Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So on Monday, Krishna willing, we shall continue.